slammed into the net canopy above the ball pit and dropped down into it, sinking out of sight.
"You almost hit me!"
Jessica had barely spoken the words when the third and final robot baby flew through the air and landed at her feet with a resounding bang. Marla let herself fall to the ground, breathing heavily, her eyes wide with panicked fury. Jessica stared down at the creature as it locked its sights on the children again.
"Oh, no, you don't."
Jessica picked it up just as it started to crawl. She held it over the pit, and it turned its head around completely to face her with its ant-like eyes. Its little rosebud mouth opened, flashing two rows of pointy predator's teeth, then snapped shut, chomping the air. Jessica shuddered and dropped it, watching with grim fascination as it churned its arms and legs, digging itself deeper into the pit.
"Jessica!" Marla cried, and she spun around.
Lights had come on behind them, illuminating a large show stage with a bright purple curtain as its backdrop. On the stage, and in the spotlight, was a glossy and white foxy animatronic, its mouth open and arms wide, ready to perform for a cheering crowd. The fox looked down at them with delight.
"Was that there a second ago?" Jessica whispered.
Suddenly, the fox's body began cracking apart. Metal plates split away from the center of its torso, from its arms and legs, lifting out, splitting again, and folding back, leaving only its canine head untouched, grinning maniacally as its body was horribly transformed. Jessica ran to the children as all at once, tentacle-like metal limbs erupted from what had been Foxy, and the mutilated skeleton creature stretched out into its new, semi-arachnid form.
"Get them out!" Jessica cried.
Alana and Ron were frozen to the spot, staring, and Marla slapped their cheeks lightly. Ron snatched up Lisa's hand, and together they all ran for the front door.
"Jessica!" Marla cried as they reached the door. "We can't let it get out!"
The creature was on top of the monkey bars now, elongating itself to terrifying proportions, as if showing off its tangled metal spines.
"Get them out!"
Jessica shouted again, pushing away from them, then turning her attention back to the mangled pink and white fox. The thing began to slowly dismount the monkey bars, its limbs slipping over and around one another, changing its shape with every step it took. Its fox-like face, and its vaguely human one, were both intent on the children, the heads angled slightly toward each other so that each of its eyes could focus. Jessica took a deep breath, then pulled the earpiece out of her ear, struggling to steady her hands long enough to slip it into her pocket.
"Over here!"
she screamed as loudly as she could, her throat going raw, and the canine head ducked under the other neck, its eye rolling around to fix on her.
"Yeah, over here!"
Jessica cried, her voice hoarse, and the thing came down from the monkey bars with menacing grace and began to slink toward her. She glanced around.
"Should have thought this through."
At the door, she could see Marla bracing it open and shooing the children through, one at a time, then looking back to Jessica. Jessica nodded her head and waved Marla away. She grabbed a folding chair from a nearby table and hefted it over her head, then flung it at the creature. It landed with a clatter on the floor, missing the thing entirely. The fox head cocked to the side, its mouth hanging open to show all of its teeth. Then it lurched forward, its metal appendages banging against the ground. Jessica turned and ran. She looked around wildly for an escape as she darted through the massive tables at the center of the room. She shoved over a table behind her, but the thing just climbed over it like it was flat ground. Jessica sped up. The creature was right behind her,
the fox head snapping its jaws as the unskinned skull grinned ghoulishly from its swing. She raced back the way they had come, ducking between the cotton candy machine and the popcorn cart. The sign blocking the doors was still in place, and she flung it away and yanked the door handle. It rattled in place, but still wouldn't open. Something crashed behind her, and Jessica spun around to see the popcorn cart knocked over, popcorn strewn across the black and white floor tiles. The creature stretched out a limb and pushed the cotton candy machine experimentally. It rocked, but did not fall. Then another limb shot out. It hit Jessica's leg with a smack, and she stumbled back against the door, an involuntary shout of pain blurting from her mouth. The fox and the unskinned head looked at each other, the head bouncing on its cables. Then in unison they turned their eyes on her as the creature undulated its limbs, displaying their full extension. Jessica felt in her pocket for the earpiece, but couldn't find it. It must have fallen out while she was running. She darted her eyes from side to side, afraid to move even her head. She was cornered, caught between the wall and a children's climbing set. There was no way past the thing. All at once, the creature seized the cotton candy machine with three of its limbs, crushing it, shattering glass sprayed in all directions as it carelessly flung the machine aside. Jessica shielded her face, turning away, and as the machine cracked the floor tiles behind her, she saw it. The red and yellow bars of the playset nearby led high above the room below, where a colorful pipe maze began, bolted tight to the ceiling, and disappearing into a circular hole in the wall and into the next room. "That's my way out." Jessica set her foot on the bottom rung of the playset and started to climb as fast as she could. Below her came a wrenching noise, and she glanced down to see the creature tearing up the playset, the unskinned head swinging and bobbing gleefully. It reached up and tore out the rung below her, and she climbed faster, hurling her upper body into the tube just as one of the creature's hands grasped the last piece of the playset. Jessica scrabbled for a handhold, at last managing to pull her full body inside the tube. She crawled as fast as she could, the pipe shaking with every movement, then stopped to look down. Although some of the plastic tunnel was bolted to the ceiling, there were large portions that were not. "This was made for kids, not me." Jessica rocked herself carefully, and the section of plastic below her rocked as well, the plastic segments creaking at the seams. Jessica shivered. "Slow and steady." She checked her hands and knees, making sure they were safely in place, then started forward again. She was in a narrow, unadorned tube, hovering above an empty hallway, lit by a single, exposed fluorescent light that hummed as it flickered. The hum of the fluorescent light seemed to grow louder as she made her way cautiously along the fragile plastic flooring, filling her ears almost painfully, as if she had gone deep underground. She worked her jaw open and shut, trying to clear the sensation, but the noise persisted. When she reached the segment of tubing that went into the wall above the door, she hesitated, trying to see inside, but there was only darkness. Jessica took a deep breath and carefully crossed into the next room. Silence fell. The humming noise was blissfully gone. The only light was behind her, and bizarrely, it did not penetrate into the room, as if it were somehow being filtered out. She looked back and saw the circle of light where she had come, but everything else was in darkness. Jessica blinked, waiting for her eyes to adjust, but all she saw was black. "Okay, then." She shuffled slowly forward, feeling carefully and sliding her knees along the support beams that ran along sections of the tunnel. After a few minutes, she came to a turn, bumping her head gently on the plastic, and she felt her way around it with a vague sense of accomplishment. A point of orange light appeared below her, and she startled, her hand slipping off the support beam and rattling the plastic. She caught her balance, her heart racing, and a pair of green lights appeared, a few feet away from the first one. They vanished, then reappeared, and another pair, purple, sprang out of the darkness beside them, and this time Jessica saw the dark pinpoint at the center of each circle. Jessica tensed with an awful recognition as more and more sets of colored lights appeared. Eyes. Their eyes. The room below was slowly filling with sets of eyes until it seemed impossible that so many creatures could fit into the space. They all stared upward, unblinking at Jessica. She moved slowly forward, her hands shaking as they found their way along the beams, and the eyes followed her as she went. "Don't look down." Jessica set her gaze on the darkness in front of her and shuffled on and on for what felt like ages. Each time she glanced down, there were more, pairs and pairs of watchful eyes, all of them rapt on her progress. Jessica shivered. She moved faster, still feeling carefully before she slid her hands and knees along. Then the tube curved slightly, and a circle of dim light came into view. Jessica crawled for it as fast as she dared, the tube swaying precariously as she moved. She crawled through the hole and turned back. The room was in darkness again. All the eyes had vanished. Jessica shuddered, revolted, then looked down at the room she now hovered above. The light was dim and unsteady, flashing strange colors at intervals, but she could see clearly. Peering down, Jessica saw that it was coming from the carnival games that filled the room, some flickering noiselessly and others giving steady light in every hue. She took a deep breath and looked ahead, trying to see where the tube led. "I really hope there's another way out," she thought, and started crawling again. The plastic tubing rattled as she went, the only noise in the dark room. Jessica swallowed. As the adrenaline waned, she was beginning to remember how much she hated enclosed spaces. "Just keep moving." She reached a split in the tubing. One way snaked around the perimeter of the room, the other through another wall, into the pipe maze bolted to the ceiling of the next room. She scanned the room, then made her choice. She took the turn, taking the tunnel that fed through the neatly cut hole in the wall, and found herself back in the main dining room. She paused and listened. There was no sound of movement in the dining room, and she craned her neck to look down through one of the large plastic panes, searching the area. The creature was nowhere to be seen. She had not noticed the play pipes that covered the ceiling before climbing up into them, but now she saw the extent of them, with no end in sight and no way down. The place that she had climbed to enter the tunnels was utterly destroyed. "How am I going to get out?" She cast her eyes helplessly over the maze, tracing the paths she could take, and suddenly she saw it. The ball pit where she had thrown the baby crawlers was across the room, and it had a canopy made of climbing rope that stretched 15 or 20 feet above the floor. The tube went directly over it. Jessica took a deep breath and crawled farther out into the room, bracing herself. She made it to the first turning point, and suddenly the pipe shook. She paused, but the structure shook again, and again. The light was being obscured from below her, and Jessica looked down. The unskinned skull grinned up at her with yellow eyes, suspended below as if out of nowhere. The head swiveled sideways and elevated up and over the plastic tunnel. Jessica looked up in dread and saw the body of the creature right above her, its limbs wrapped around the tube like a monstrous squid seizing a ship. She stifled a scream, and her heart skipped as she fought not to hyperventilate. The fox head lowered to eye level and snapped beside her, and she screamed and shied away. Her hand hit the plastic floor between the support beams, and the segment fell straight down. Jessica clambered back before falling with it, and quickly took a corner, heading off to a new direction. The fox head swooped upward in a blur and vanished. Jessica crawled in a straight line, keeping her eyes fixed ahead. The structure continued to shake, and she could hear plastic breaking behind her, as well as large segments of the pipe maze crashing to the ground. Soon she reached the ball pit, and she stared down at the canopy of ropes through the bottom of the tube, hesitating. Now what? The structure shook again, but this time it was different. This time it trembled as though someone, or something, were in the maze with her. The entirety of the structure swayed and rocked on the bolts it hung from. Jessica kicked out the plastic below her, bracing herself on the sides of the tube as she looked down. Something moved in the pit below. Three of the crawler's heads were above the surface, staring up at her, disembodied with blank eyes. In unison, they snapped their little jaws, and she startled, hitting her head on the top of the plastic tube. "Stupid babies," she muttered. When she looked down again, they were back in motion, swimming through the balls and snapping, apparently at random. Jessica shivered and froze, suddenly paralyzed at the next step of her plan. For a moment, she prayed that it wasn't too late to just stay silent and wait for danger to pass. The structure trembled again, this time over and over in rapid succession. A spiral of shimmering metal flew through the tunnel. Then she saw its gleaming fox's head, its mouth open in an impossible smile. Jessica screamed and fell sideways through the hole, landing heavily on the rope canopy. It sank inward, giving her a split second before she began to slip downward. She grabbed wildly at the net, the ropes burning her hands and entangling her feet. Then she got her footing and scrambled back up the slope to the top, wrapping her hands around the metal support bar. She watched the hole in the bottom of the pipe that she had fallen through, expecting something to come out, but nothing did. There was motion in the pipes, barely visible through the thick, foggy plastic. Jessica searched in panic, trying to locate the creature, but there was movement everywhere. Every pipe seemed to be crawling with life. Then she realized all of the movement was flowing in the same direction. Jessica followed the flow with her eyes, through pipe after pipe, all the way up to a plastic end cap just above her. With a crash, the end cap burst out of place, and bolts rained down from the sky, hitting Jessica on the head. The fox head beamed down at her. More of its body pushed its way through, more and more limbs emerging as it balanced itself delicately on the edge of the pipe, like a cat preparing to pounce on a mouse. Something fell out of Jessica's pocket with a ding. It was the earpiece, which must have been wedged into her other pocket. Jessica held steady, violently fumbling to retrieve the earpiece. The fox head craned sideways as the last piece of the monster exited the pipe and joined the rest of the metal mass, perched like a vulture on the rickety infrastructure of the pipes. Finally, the fox lunged. Jessica crammed the earpiece into her ear and jumped, and the creature slammed into the netting where she had been, its limbs shooting through the spaces in the net. Jessica landed on her back on the top of an arcade cabinet, then fell to the floor below with a thud. The wind knocked out of her, and she wheezed. The creature struggled to free itself from the net. The limbs writhed, then the whole body sank down with the net, tearing it off the frame as it went. The creature was stuck, its limbs tangled in the mesh. It thrashed and flailed, and its long, snake-like appendages lashed through the air. The net rocked back and forth, straining in its bonds, then gave way in an instant. The thing dropped straight down into the pit, sending colorful plastic balls splashing over the sides of the pit. It twisted frantically, still tangled in the torn netting. Then suddenly, it began to twitch. Jessica watched, wide-eyed, as the bound creature slowly sank into the ball pit, with a sound like metal grinding metal. After a moment, it vanished entirely, though the balls boiled up frenziedly as the gnashing sound continued. Briefly, she caught a glimpse of a black-eyed crawler, chewing contentedly. She drew in a shaky breath, then ran for the front entrance. Jessica burst out through the double door and into the cool night air and swayed on her feet. "Are you all right?" Marla asked with alarm.
"I'm fine."
Jessica looked at each of the children, confirming that they were all there, all safe.
"Except one. Carlton, do you have him?"
She forced herself to smile.
"So, who wants to visit a police station?"
Carlton crept quickly down the hall, scanning the walls and floor for signs of struggle, of anything that would indicate something had passed through. There was another door a little way down the hall, and he paused outside it, carefully turning the knob while staying outside the frame. Bracing himself, he pushed the door in and waited. Nothing came out, and he cautiously peered inside. The room was completely empty.
"Calm before the storm," he whispered to himself, and shut the door.
When he reached the tee in the hall, he paused.
"Where are you, kid?"
He closed his eyes, listening. There was nothing. And then, a muffled scraping came from the wall behind him, back the way he and Marla had come. Carlton went toward it and put his ear to the wall. The rustling continued. It was an odd sound he could not quite pinpoint, but it sounded like someone moving. He stepped back, examining the wall. It was plain, painted beige, with a large silver air vent near the baseboard, about 3 feet high and almost as wide.
"That's strange."
Carlton knelt down in front of the vent and turned on his flashlight, which worked, somewhat impressively, after its extended use as a blunt instrument. He turned the beam on the vent and squinted, trying to see inside, but the slats were too close together to make out anything. A faint sound came from somewhere deep inside. It was indistinct, but it was unmistakably a voice. Carlton tugged at the grate with his fingernails, and it moved easily. He pulled the whole thing out, revealing a dark tunnel about 4 feet high. He shone his flashlight inside. The walls were concrete, painted red on one side and blue on the other in faded colors. Incomprehensible words were scribbled on them in crayon, and the yellow linoleum floor was scuffed with black sneaker marks, scratched and turning up at the edges.
"This place is brand new, right?"
Carlton muttered as he crouched down and crawled inside, keeping the light ahead of him. It was unsettling to think of someone carefully laying down a new floor, then marking it with deliberate signs of wear. Adult hands mimicking children's painstaking handwriting and simple drawings. He cast the light around. On the red wall there was a drawing of a house and stick figures. Underneath, someone had written, "My house," with the E drawn backward. The sound of the voice came again, echoing faintly through the tunnel ahead, and Carlton crawled forward awkwardly with the flashlight in one hand. The wall color changed every few feet, cycling through the rainbow at random, with childlike graffiti spaced unevenly all along the way. He came to what he thought was an opening to a new tunnel, but when he turned the light toward it, he saw that it was only a cubbyhole, small enough for a child to squeeze into. In the corner of it was a little blue sneaker, the laces untied, and Carlton swallowed.
"What is this place?"
His flashlight lit on a silently screaming face, and Carlton jumped back, dropping the light. He snatched it up again, his heart thumping, and shone it on the figure. It was a jack-in-the-box stuck in its surprise position, a white-faced clown, its mouth gaping in perpetual laughter. "This isn't a vent," Carlton whispered, letting the light leave the painted face and continue down the colorful hall littered with hiding spaces and scuff marks. "This is part of the play area." The light fixed on a rainbow stretching above one of the hiding spaces. "Hide-and-seek hallway," it read. "This can't be good." Carlton winced. The child's voice echoed again, this time a little louder, and he shook off the eerie sensation. "I'm coming, kid," he promised silently. He rounded a corner, but stopped short. There was an animatronic baby in a cubbyhole, motionless, laying on its back. Carlton's elbows and knees trembled. "Please don't move." Black, insect-like eyes stared blankly at him from a sweet, plastic face. The crawler did not move, apparently deactivated. He backed away cautiously and turned his light on the path ahead. He was approaching a turn, but there was still no sign of an exit. He crawled on, passing stick figures and houses that were beginning to look suspiciously repetitive.
"I see you."
Carlton whirled around. There was nothing in sight but a closed door. It was the size of the other cubbyholes, child height, with a small, heart-shaped window near the top. As he passed his light over the little door, something glinted through the heart-shaped window. Carlton stiffened, but before he could think to move, the door broke off its hinges as Freddy crawled forcefully out, a maniacal grin on his shiny purple and white face as he unfolded from the cramped space he had stuffed himself into. Carlton crawled backward frantically, and Freddy matched his motions, keeping a distance of inches between them. Carlton glanced around, then turned and crawled as fast as he could down the tunnel, his knees and hands slamming into the floor painfully as he raced to get away. He glanced back. Freddy was crawling behind him, his mechanical arms and legs thundering faster than Carlton could hope to escape. He rounded a corner, and Freddy caught his foot, the iron fingers digging into his heel. Carlton kicked with his other foot, wresting himself free, and got to his feet and started to run, hunched down to half his height and scraping the ceiling with his back. From behind, he could hear the sound of Freddy bearing down on him, his hands and knees pounding the floor with vibrating force. Carlton turned another corner, and relief surged through him. There was a vent along the tunnel, an actual vent that led to a large room. Carlton kicked it out without hesitation and scurried through to the room on the other side. The room was enormous, seemingly designed to house a single, giant carnival ride. It was a ring of seats set on an angle, held together by huge metal arms on a spiral, a terrifying variation on the merry-go-round that would whip around at high speed while tilting nauseatingly up and down. On the far side of it was a door marked exit. Before Carlton could run for the door, Freddy burst out of the tunnel, climbing to his feet, his eyes sickeningly reflective in the dark.
"I see you so clearly now," said the speaker in Freddy's chest.
Carlton turned to run, then smacked into the carnival ride, biting his lip and drawing blood. He turned back just in time to see Freddy lunge at him, and Carlton ducked under the ride, the blow just missing him and hitting the metal side of the tilted merry-go-round. The sound rang out in the vast, empty room, and he shuddered, then leaped back as another blow hit the ride above him, reverberating so hard it rattled his teeth. Carlton looked up. The metal had bowed out above his head, caving to Freddy's strength.
"You can't escape!"
Carlton scrambled away, tripping over the heavy steel beams that undergirded the ride, bolting it to the ground. Freddy's shiny purple and white calves stalked him calmly, keeping pace with him along the perimeter of the ride as Carlton ducked under heavy cables and mysterious, frightening-looking gears.
"I've almost got you," Freddy announced.
"Not yet," Carlton muttered as he carefully untangled his foot from the heavy wire that had ensnared him. He craned his neck, trying to see the room around him. There was no way he could get past Freddy, and even if he did, he would pursue him relentlessly. Carlton was backed up against the tilted end of the ride and up against the control platform. As he craned his head upward, he could see a large on-off lever, which was almost in reach.
"Nowhere else to run!"
Carlton waited for Freddy to make his way deeper under the ride, pressing and contorting his body to get at Carlton between the beams. Carlton squeezed out from under the ride and hoisted himself just high enough to pull the lever and activate the ride, then dropped to the ground and covered his head. Freddy reached for him, but the ride tilted abruptly. Carlton saw Freddy jerk about, wrenched by the moving parts, until the ride jolted hard. Carlton clutched his head as his ears rang with the impact, a growing shriek of tearing metal and grating gears as the ride slowed, wobbling unsteadily on its axis. Carlton didn't move. From where he had landed, he could see the apparatus in motion, shredding through the body of what had been Freddy as the machine ground on inexorably through its routine. Scraps of purple appeared and vanished, then fell to the floor, spat out by the machine. A yellow eyeball appeared in a space above two gears, and Carlton watched with shocked fascination as the rest of the precariously balanced body was pulverized by the alternating beams, then dropped to the ground in several distinct masses. The machine screeched ear-splittingly, then slowed and sputtered to a dead stop. Carlton didn't move for a moment. He got to his feet and cautiously moved away from the apparatus, carefully avoiding the littered scraps of metal and plastic on the ground. He didn't dare climb under the thing again, but he prodded it gently with his toe, then yanked his foot back as something dropped out. Half of Freddy's head, one-eyed and still grinning insanely, fell out of the machine near Carlton, spun partially on the ground, then stopped moving, and its single eye flickered on, then sputtered and died. The speaker in the now-smashed chest piece, lying armless and legless nearby, crackled with static, then spoke.
"Thanks for playing. Come again soon."
The voice trailed away and went silent. In the distance, the child's scream came again, and Carlton was startled back to himself.
"Hang on, kid," he whispered, and headed grimly for the door.
Chapter 14. Charlie's duplicate stared back at her, looking stunned for an instant. Then Charlie watched her own face curve into a bright, cruel smile. The other Charlie didn't move, and Charlie's fear receded as she watched this strange imitation of herself, astonished.
"That's my face."
Charlie reached up and touched her own cheek, and the other girl imitated her. Charlie tilted her head to the side, and the girl mirrored her movement. Charlie could not tell if she was being mocked or if the other girl was simply as entranced as she was. The duplicate was a little taller than Charlie, and Charlie flicked her eyes to the girl's feet. Her black combat boots had heels. She was wearing a red V-neck shirt and a short black skirt, and her hair was long and hung in shiny waves, a look Charlie had given up even attempting halfway through ninth grade. She looked polished, confident in her stance. She looked the way Charlie wished she could be, some version of herself that had figured out curling irons and sophistication and taking up space in the world without apology.
"What are you?" Charlie whispered, mesmerized.
"Come on," the other Charlie said, holding out her hand, and Charlie started to reach out to her, then stopped herself, yanking her hand away. She shrank away, stumbling back across the hall, and her duplicate closed the distance between them, leaning in so close Charlie should have felt her breathing. A long moment passed, but the other Charlie did not draw breath.
"You need to come with me," she said. "Father wants us to come home."
Charlie startled at the phrase.
"My father is dead," she said.
She pressed back against the wall, as far from the girl's face as she could get.
"Well, would you like to have a live one?" the other Charlie asked, with a mocking edge.
"There is nothing that you can give me, and certainly not that," Charlie said shakily, inching backward into the storage room. The duplicate followed her step for step. Charlie glanced past the duplicate and into the open bedroom door. John emerged into the hallway, leaning heavily on the doorframe and gripping his side.
"Are you okay, Charlie?"
he asked in a low, steady voice.
"Oh, I'm just fine, John," Charlie's duplicate said cheerfully.
"Charlie?" John repeated, ignoring her.
Charlie nodded, not daring to take her eyes off the imposter.
"She says Father wants us to come home," Charlie said.
John stepped up behind the other Charlie.
"Father? Would that be William Afton?" John demanded.
He took a few sprinted steps and grabbed a lamp by its base, raising it for attack. The other Charlie smiled again, then swiftly raised her arm and backhanded John across the face. He dropped the lamp and staggered backward, catching himself against the wall, and the duplicate grabbed for Charlie's hand. Charlie ducked away, running for the hallway with the girl on her heels.
"Hey, that was just round one!"
John shouted, beckoning his assailant to come back. He grabbed the duplicate girl's arm, yanking her back toward him and away from where Charlie had run. The duplicate allowed John to hold her close, not resisting. John was washed with fear as he stood eye to eye with the imposter.
"Now what do I do?"
"Just like by the old oak tree when we were little, John," the duplicate whispered.
She pulled him close and pressed her lips against his. His eyes widened, and he tried to push her away, but he could not move. When she finally released him and pulled back, she was Charlie, his Charlie, and there was a high, painful ringing in his ears. He covered his ears, but the ringing increased exponentially, and for the few brief seconds before he collapsed to the ground, he saw her face morph into a thousand things. The room spun, and his head hit the ground with a crack. The girl smiled and glanced at Charlie, then drew back her foot and kicked John in the ribs, knocking him onto his side and against a heavy wooden trunk. Charlie ran toward him, but before she could reach him, the girl grabbed her hair, bringing tears to her eyes. The imposter pulled upward, lifting Charlie several inches off the ground, and then flung her aside. Charlie tried to regain her footing but tripped backward over a cardboard box and slammed hard into the opposite wall, knocking the wind out of her as John got warily to his feet. Charlie climbed to her knees. She dragged in heavy, grinding breaths, watching helplessly as the other Charlie strode toward John. He straightened, and without a pause, she punched him in the stomach. He doubled over, and before he could stand, she hit the back of his head with her fist, like it was a hammer and he was a nail. John fell forward, catching himself on his hands and knees, and scrambled up. He lunged again at the girl, catching her shoulder with his fist, but the blow glanced off her, and he yelped in pain,
clutching his hand like it had hit something harder than flesh and bone. The imposter took him by the shoulders, lifting him off the ground, and carried him across the room, then pressed him against the wall. She released him and let him stand, turning to look at Charlie momentarily. Then she placed her open palm against John's chest. Suddenly, John began to gasp for breath, his face turning red. The imposter's face remained unchanged, her open hand slowly pressing harder against his chest.
"I can't," John gasped for air. "Can't breathe."
He clutched at her arm with both hands, but it was no use as she continued to steadily press into him. John slowly began to slide up the wall, inch by inch, the pressure forcing his entire body upward.
"Stop!"
Charlie cried, but the other Charlie didn't flinch.
"Please!"
Charlie scrambled to her feet and ran to John's side, but the other Charlie snapped out her other arm and caught her by the neck without moving her hand from John's chest. Her fingers closed on Charlie's throat, closing off her windpipe as she lifted her up onto her toes. Charlie choked, kicking and gasping. The imposter held her there, looking expressionlessly from Charlie to John as she kept them both immobilized and struggling to breathe.
"Okay," Charlie wheezed. "I want to talk, please," she begged hoarsely.
The imposter dropped them both. John fell motionless to the floor.
"You've hurt him. Let me help him."
Charlie coughed, pulling herself up.
"You're so attached to something so easily broken," she said with amusement.
Charlie strained to see past her, anxiously watching John's chest as it rose and fell.
"He's alive."
Charlie took a breath, then turned to face the girl who had her face.
"What do you want to talk about?"
she asked tightly. Carlton let the heavy door slam shut behind him and ran on without looking back. There was another door up ahead, and dim light filtered through a small window near the top. The child's cry echoed again, and Carlton froze, unable to pinpoint its direction. The high-pitched sound pierced the air again, and he grimaced at the sound. It was raw and thin, the scream of a kid who had been screaming for a long time. Carlton peered through the window in the door. It looked deserted, and he opened the door cautiously, then stopped dead. Everything looked the same, every hall, every room. Lights flickered, speakers hummed. One light seemed to be about to burn out, making a high-pitched screech that echoed through the chamber.
"Kid,"
he whispered, but there was no answer, and Carlton was suddenly aware that he may have been chasing echoes and lights for the last 10 minutes. He suddenly felt the weight of how alone he was, and it became a physical thing. The air itself seemed to grow heavier around him. His breath slowed, and he dropped to his knees, then fell back to sit. He stared down the empty hallway despairingly, and finally scooted to the side, maneuvering his back against the wall so he could at least see his assailant before he died, whoever or whatever his assailant might turn out to be.
"I've failed. I'm not going to find him."
Tears sprang to his eyes unexpectedly.
"Michael, I'm so sorry."
In the days after Michael disappeared, his father had asked him so many questions, going over that one afternoon like he believed together they could recreate it and solve the puzzle.
"I searched for the missing piece. I promise. I searched."
He had gone over every moment of the little party in his mind, desperately trying to find the clue his father needed, the detail that would make everything clear. There were so many things he could have done to stop what had happened, if he had known then what he knew now.
"But now I know it all, and there's still nothing I can do." "I failed you, Michael,"
Carlton put his hand on his chest, trying to calm himself and not hyperventilate. I failed you again.
So, what do you want to talk about? Charlie repeated. The other Charlie narrowed her eyes.
That's better. A lot better.
The girl smiled, and Charlie leaned back as far away from her as she could. It was unnerving to see her own face glaring back at her, accusatory and petulant.
I'll listen to anything you want to say. Just don't hurt him more, Charlie pleaded, her hands raised in surrender, her heart fluttering.
Charlie's duplicate flushed with anger.
This is why, she hissed, shaking her finger accusingly.
What? This is why? I don't understand, Charlie cried.
Charlie's imposter paced the floor, her anger seeming to have drained as quickly as it came. Charlie took the opportunity to look to John again, who had rolled partially onto his back, holding his side as though in immense pain, his face still red.
He needs help.
What are you?
Charlie growled, her anger rising at the sight of John.
The question isn't, what am I? It's, what are you? And what makes you so special? Over and over again.
Charlie's duplicate approached her with renewed anger, grabbing Charlie by the throat once more and lifting her off the ground. She pinned her to the wall, baring all her teeth. The ruse of Charlie's imposter faded, revealing a painted clown face, somehow looking angrier than the human facade. The white plates of the face opened like a flower, revealing yet another face, made of coils and wires, with bare black eyes and jagged prongs for teeth. Her real face, Charlie thought.
Ask again, she growled.
What?
Charlie choked.
I said, ask me again, the metal monster snarled.
What are you?
Charlie whimpered.
I told you, that's not the right question.
The metal girl held Charlie out at a distance and looked her up and down.
Where did he hide it?
She held Charlie's throat with one hand and put her other hand on Charlie's chest, then ran a finger down the length of her breastbone. Then her eyes shot to Charlie's face, and she grabbed her chin and turned her head forcefully to the side. She seemed lost in thought for only a moment, then snapped back.
Ask again.
Charlie locked eyes with the metal face. The face plates closed over the tangle of twisted metal, reassembling the face of the clown, with her rosy cheeks and glossy lips. Soon the illusion returned, and Charlie was staring into her own eyes again. Charlie felt herself growing uncannily calm as she began to realize what the right question was.
What am I?
The imposter loosened her grip and lowered Charlie so that her feet touched the ground.
You are nothing, Charlie, the imposter said. You look at me and you see a soulless monster. How ironic, how twisted, how backward.
She let go of Charlie's throat and took a step back, her red lips losing their savor for the moment.
How unfair.
Charlie was on her knees again, struggling to regain her strength. The imposter approached her and knelt with her, placing her hand over Charlie's.
I'm not sure how this will work, but let's give it a try, she whispered, running her fingers through Charlie's hair and firmly grasping the back of her neck. She was a little girl, holding a piece of paper in her hand, excited and full of joy. A bright gold foil star shimmered on the page, above the glowing words of her kindergarten teacher. Someone gently touched her back, encouraging her to run forward into the room, into the dark. She eagerly ran inside, and there he was, standing by the work desk.
How long did I stand there before he shooed me away? Charlie searched her mind, but the answers didn't come. He didn't shoo me away. Charlie's other voice answered. Her eagerness didn't fade. She remained patient and joyful. After the first push, she came back to try again. It was only after the second push that she hesitated to go back, but she carefully returned anyway, this time holding the paper into the air. Maybe he didn't see it. He saw it. Charlie's other voice spoke down to her. This time it hurt. The ground was cold, and her arm ached where she had fallen on it. She looked for the paper. It was on the floor in front of her. Her gold star still shone bright, but he was standing on the page now. She looked up to see if he noticed, tears in her eyes. She knew she should leave it, but she couldn't. She reached forward to tug at the corner, but it was too far away. She finally crawled to it on her knees, her dress dirty now, and tried to pull the page from under his shoe. It wouldn't come loose. That's when he hit me. It was difficult to make out anything in the room after that. The room was a smear of tears and pain, and her head was still spinning. But she made out one thing, a shiny metal clown doll. Her father had turned his attention back to it, lovingly polishing her. Suddenly, her pain faded to the background, replaced with fascination, obsession. "What is all of this?" Charlie cried. Now she was looking at herself in the mirror, holding a stick of lipstick that she'd stolen from her teacher's purse. But she wasn't painting her lips with it. She was drawing bright red circles on her cheeks. The lips came next. "Are you listening to me?" the doppelganger whispered. Night had swept over everything. The rooms were dark. The halls were silent. The lab was still. Her feet made soft pats against the smooth white tiles. A tiny camera in the corner had a red blinking light on it, but it didn't matter what it saw. It was too late to stop her. She pulled the sheet away from the beautiful clown girl, beckoning her to speak. Where was the button, the one he always pressed? The eyes lit up first, and then other lights from within. It didn't take long for the painted face to search the room and find her, greeting her with a sweet smile and soft voice. Then there was screaming. The illusion was broken, and Charlie pushed herself away. Then there was screaming, the imposter repeated. It was coming from me, but... She paused and pointed to her own head with a look of curiosity. But I remember seeing her scream. She looked thoughtful for a second, and suddenly the illusion dissipated, and she appeared again as the painted clown. It's strange to remember the same moment from two pairs of eyes, but then we were one. I don't believe that story, Charlie growled. I don't believe that story at all. You aren't possessed. If you think I will believe for one second that I'm talking to the spirit of a sweet and innocent little girl, then you're crazy. I want you to call me Elizabeth, the girl said softly. Elizabeth? Charlie answered. If you were this little girl, Elizabeth, I can't bring myself to believe that that little girl would be capable of all of this.
The anger isn't from her, Elizabeth said, her painted face shifting.
She looked like a wounded animal, vulnerable but still poised to attack.
Then what? Charlie cried. My anger is from a different father.
Elizabeth strode to Charlie again, grabbing her neck again and jostling her into a white light and pain, where suddenly all was calm. A hand was stroking her hair. The sun was going down over a field of grain. A cluster of birds were fluttering overhead, their calls echoing out over the landscape. I'm so happy to be here with you, a kind voice said. She looked up and nestled against him.
No, this is mine, Charlie protested.
No, Elizabeth intruded. That doesn't belong to you. Let me show you what does belong to you.
Agony erupted, flooding the room with its sound. The walls went black, and streams of water poured down from behind the window curtains. A man lay curled on the floor, something cradled tightly in his arms, and when his mouth opened, the room shook with the sound of his anguish.
"Who is that?" Charlie said anxiously. "What is he holding?"
"You don't recognize her?" Elizabeth said. "That's Ella, of course. It's all your father had left after you were taken."
"What? No, that's not Ella." Charlie shook her head. "He cried over that cheap store-bought rag doll for 2 months." Elizabeth snarled with disbelief. "He cried into it. He bled into it. He poured his grief over it. Very unhealthy. He began to treat it as though he still had a daughter. That was my memory, me sitting with my dad, watching the sun go down. We were waiting for the stars to come out. That's my memory," Charlie said angrily.
"Look again," Elizabeth instructed, forcing the image upon her once more. There was a hand stroking her hair. The sun was going down over a field of grain. A cluster of birds were fluttering overhead, their calls echoing out over the landscape.
"I'm so happy to be here with you," a kind voice said. He gripped the doll tightly and smiled despite the tears streaming from his face.
Of course, he wasn't content with that. You had to grow up. So he made more.
Her arms hung off the side of the workbench. The joints were stiff enough to carry something lightweight, and her eyes were more realistic than he had ever made them before. He propped her up and extended her arms straight in front of her, carefully balancing a small tray on them, then setting a teacup on the tray. He furrowed his brow with frustration for a moment, turning a brass knob over and over until the room quivered and flashed. Then everything stood still, and the little girl looked at him and smiled.
"That's my memory," Charlie screamed.
"No, that's his memory," Elizabeth corrected.
"Jen, I swear she is more than another animatronic doll. You should see. She walks and she talks."
"Of course she walks and talks, Henry." Jen's voice was angry. "She walks because everything you build can walk, and she talks because everything you build can talk. But the reason why this one seems so real is because you're destroying your mind with these frequencies and codes."
Jen threw her arms in the air.
"She remembers, Jen. She remembers me. She remembers our family."
"No, Henry, you remember. Zap your head with enough of those rays, and I bet you can get the tea kettle to tell you about your lost family."
"My lost family," Henry repeated.
Jen took pause, looking regretful.
"It doesn't have to be that way, but you need to let go of this. Your wife, your son, they can still be a part of your life, but you have to let go of this."
"She is in this doll."
He gestured to Ella, who was standing upright with her teacup perched on the tray. A little rag doll sat in a wooden chair in the corner, its head draped over the armrest, its eyes staring out over the room. It took him a while to figure out that it was the rag doll, the little store-bought rag doll. Maybe he never sensed you when it wasn't around. I don't know. But over time, he started putting it inside his Charlie, whatever new Charlie he built.
Charlie sat speechless,
remembering all the times with her father, questioning each of them. Sitting on the floor of his workshop, building a block tower out of scraps of wood as he bent over his work, he turned back to her and